Welcome to the Legalpreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Sager, founder and CEO of Legalpreneur Inc. As a serial entrepreneur and someone that works exclusively with small business owners legally protecting their business, I'm dedicated to covering common legal issues faced by business owners, providing you with the business knowledge you need to catapult your business's growth, and showing you just how some of the world's most elite entrepreneurs have handled these legal and business issues themselves. In true attorney fashion, the information in this episode is not legal advice. This is for informational purposes only, and you should always consult with your attorney before implementing any of the information in the show. Hello there. Welcome back to another episode. I'm so excited because I have been telling you all that I'm going to bring on a patent attorney. I had one many years ago on the podcast, but I knew it was time for an update. So I'm so excited to have Bennett David here on the podcast today. He is a patent attorney and does all things IP. So I am so excited. Bennett, thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah. So get started. Tell us, how did you get to where you are today?
Oh, man, it's an interesting story. So
let's hear it.
So I was in high school, actually, before I even knew about the intellectual property and the patent law field. I always knew I wanted to be an engineer. And while I was in high school, I was playing basketball and just wanted to focus on, you know, playing ball and hopefully playing D1 somewhere. And just want to keep my grades up high enough to be able to get to a great D1 school. And in my senior year, there was a teacher there called Mr. Clinton. And he, everyone said he was a great teacher. You know, you should be able to get an A out of his class. And I was like, well, yeah, I need the A. You know, I definitely need to boost my GPA. And then I took his class and he's like, you seem to really like the law. And I was like, yeah, it's great. You know, we've done field trips. You know, we went down to the courthouse, had a chance to see, you know, depositions being taken, all types of things. Before I knew it, he said, you should really think about it. You should think about going into it. And I said, no, I'm going to be an engineer, you know, computer and electrical engineering. I'm going to go to an engineering school, maybe State or A&T or Carnegie Mellon or somewhere, MIT, somewhere like that. And he was like, okay. He said, but just do me a favor. Go home and look up patent law and just let me know what your thoughts are. I said, okay, I'll oblige you. So I went home, came back and said, okay, you have a point. Let's talk further. And really the rest was history from there. It became an option in my career path. And, I went to A&T, majored in computer engineering and had a great experience there. Just all around. I can't say enough about HBCUs and everything that they mean to me. And initially thought I was going to go into IT support. So I did that for a little bit. I worked for a major investment bank and I was a programmer there and managed a lot of their high frequency trading systems all across the world and worked some crazy hours. And eventually I just said, you know what? I want to be more on the innovative side of things. I see all these great creations we're making. I mean, we don't really get any credit for it because it's owned by the company. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but I would love to be more innovative and I want to be able to help other inventors and other people who are entrepreneurs just be able to get to the next level because IP is a major asset that a lot of people really don't exploit. And whether it's you want to go into licensing or you want to, you know, or you just want to create the product yourself, you have to create that space of protection for yourself. And I said, okay, let's go to law school. Let's do it. Went through the whole process of the LSAT and, you know, and went to Suffolk University and in Boston and decided to do a dual degree program. So I got my JD and my MBA, found the MBA to be very helpful even now in my practice. I find myself, depending on the client, you end up operating as the de facto general counsel when it comes to like technology matters, and all types of things. And if you don't have a full understanding of their business and the way that they're trying to go, or maybe even be, you know, have foresight to, hey, these might be things you need to consider as you continue to grow your business. It's tough to really counsel them, but being able to have that experience, it really allows you to really look at it from a holistic view. And so from there, you know, patent bar, which is a lot of fun, passed the bar in Massachusetts and North Carolina. And here we are, you know, and, you know, just enjoying every second of it. It's rewarding every single day to just do a new challenge and just work with new people every day.
As a quick reminder, the Legalpreneur book is coming out at the end of this month. I am so excited. It's been a labor of love, and Legalpreneur, the business owner's guide to legally protecting your business, will finally be in your hands. If you have not already pre-ordered your copy, get to it now. The actual price of the hardcover book will be more than the pre-sale price. And if you are Getting in on the pre-sale price, you actually get over $2,000 in bonuses. So run, don't walk, go get the Legalpreneur book right now while it's still on pre-order. Okay, I love this. So I had the podcast for quite a while and I always tell people, look, don't, and anytime I'm talking to people about intellectual property, I'm like, look, I can cover copyrights, I can cover trademarks, but do not ask me about patents because all I know is they are inventions. That is literally all I know about patents. So if somebody comes to you and they're like, hey, how do I know if I have something that can be protected with a patent? What do you tell them?
Sure. So, I mean, the very first thing I say is, hey, you know, do you feel like it's new? You know, is there something novel? There's something interesting about it that, you know, that prompted you to create this item or this design? That's typically where it starts. You know, typically people innovate from a place of need, right? Or a place of want, or, hey, I couldn't find this out here, so I decided to make it myself. And those are typically the stories I hear from inventors and companies all the time who are creating various products and services and trying to just, you know, find a way to make things easier. And if they say yes, then my next question is, okay, well, what's the benefit? You know, what's the benefit to the public, or what's the benefit to your particular area of commerce? And then from there, we're typically able to kind of really flesh out what's so important, what's so neat, you know, about this idea, this new inventive concept. So from there, I typically have to decide, all right, like what type of patent is it? So, you know, we have utility patents, and that's essentially like something that's a useful device or something that does something or changes a one concept to another. So utility is useful, right? Then you have design patents, where essentially this is where trademarks kind of overlap just a little bit, you know? And I think it is like a newer concept that I really try to push with clients now that, yeah, you have that trademark protection on this design or this idea, but that next level really is the design patent, especially for people who design clothes or they design certain aesthetic views or maybe a car or a type of product that they have. And I mean, one of the most interesting design patents is a Coca-Cola bottle.
I was just going to ask that. Oh my gosh.
And every time you see a Coca-Cola bottle, regardless if you see Coca-Cola on the front or not, what do you think?
You know what it is.
Exactly.
So is it only protected with a design patent, or they also have it protected with trade dress?
Both ways.
Okay.
So that's where you can really expand. So a lot of my practice is around building IP portfolios. Mm-hmm. I feel like when you're able to build that portfolio out, you broaden the protection. As attorneys, you know, we're able to really, you know, create that scope, you know, around, you know, that bubble around the client and their product and their, or their service or their idea. So yeah, as long as you can show that you're continuously utilizing this product, you trade dress, design, trademarks, you can essentially create a nice little bubble of protection around your company, your idea, your design very quickly.
Now, can you explain the difference in the types of protection? So Coca-Cola has the trade dress for this protection and it's the patent protection for this.
Yeah. So it's funny, like a lot of it is, it overlaps. Okay. So it overlaps. So if we start with like trademarks, okay. So we know this is our branding. So you're protecting branding at that particular point. You know, when we start talking about, you know, the design patent, we're saying, okay, like, you know, the design of how this operates, or maybe just how it looks by itself. There's some designs that it's useful based off of how it's designed. It wouldn't work any other way based off of, you know, this widget being placed in this location, or this wheel being placed in this area, this axle placed at a certain angle. And that alone can create a broad form of protection that maybe you might not have received via utility. Then we take that next step to trade dress. Then that's where it's commercially recognizable, you know, from a different standpoint, that when people see this design, particularly is directed towards your brand, your company, you as the inventor or the creator. So that actually, when it comes to litigation, these are the things that you really think about, you know, especially with patent protection and being in the space of IP, is if this is litigated, if someone is infringing, because that's what we look for. Can this be infringed? If it's infringed, awesome. You know, like, you know, we have options. We can license, you know, we can come up with different, you know, streams of income here for the client now. And, you know, at that point, now if you're able to prove commercial recognizance, I mean, that takes it to a whole new level, especially when you're speaking to a jury or whether you're trying to determine what are the damages here. And that makes people think twice about whether or not we really want to try to infringe this idea or this product.
Yeah. So we have a design patent, we have a utility patent.
What are the steps in protecting those patents? Because there aren't there different types of applications?
Yeah. So, we could talk about it from a couple of different aspects. I think one of the first things that a lot of people ask is, okay, I think a patent is what I need, but what do you need from me?
Yeah.
Okay. So, typically there's a couple of different steps here. I say, hey, really anything that you've written, let's say, you have a notepad here and you've written all these ideas. It could be full of ideas. That's helpful. You might have all these different designs, or you've gone to a manufacturer. Those things are very helpful. Bring them to the table. The more information, the better. Because for my job, it allows me to really step through and figure out, okay, where are novel concepts here? It allows me to really flesh out this application. So your notepad turns into this very beautiful patent application and my 50 pages in it. And you had no idea with all these different drawings and figures. So all those things are very helpful. So I always say, listen, bring everything you have to the table. And then let me from there evaluate and do my job. So any designs, any drawings, any notes that you've written, if you've, gone to a designer, maybe some of the statement of work, the purpose, the ideas behind the product, the different commercial areas that you're trying to go into, that really helps define the scope of how the application is going to be drafted from a utility standpoint. Same thing for design as well. So especially the figures and the different concepts that you've developed, those are very important. To bring to the table. And then the next thing is to bring your expertise. That's what I really love about my job. I get to sit here and hear from the inventor, hey, I created this because of this. What you don't realize is now I'm like, oh, I can utilize this in the background of the application.
Yeah.
Oh, and then what's really neat about it is it's not important, but it's this little thing it really does when I use it over here. And I'm like, oh, what they don't know, that is very important. I'm going to make sure we talk about that. And a lot of times what I find is that this one concept turns into multiple applications. We can create continuations and divisionals and really expand the patent portfolio. It goes back to what I said. We want to build that portfolio. That's where the valuation is located.
That's exactly what I teach clients is, look, it is perfectly legal to not do any of the stuff that we talk about, but it is our job to help you build this wall of protection. And once we have this wall of protection so high, nobody's going to be able to get into your business and infringe on it. That's why we're doing these things. So it's not illegal to operate and not have a patent on your invention, but that's going to cause other people to come and rip you off and come and infringe on your what you could have been had protected and monetized the whole time. So can you talk a little bit about the risk that somebody runs by not protecting their patent?
Oh, absolutely. Well, the first risk is kind of where you were headed, right? When it comes to infringement, someone can see what you're doing and they can try to just create around it or recreate it. Yeah. And let's say they have deeper pockets than you. It happens all the time. I hate to say that. Mm-hmm. And I love protecting the little guy, the smaller businesses, the startups, because you have these big companies, deep pockets, billions, trillions of dollars. And they just come and say, oh, that's neat. And they'll create it within a week and have it on a shelf by the end of the month. So meanwhile, you haven't taken the proper steps in order to ensure that you're protected. It goes back to that wall. The higher the wall that you create, it shows that they really took extreme lengths. That's what you want to show in an infringement case. They took extreme lengths in order to really make sure they took over your branding or they took over your design or your device that you've created. So that's part one. You have a leg to stand on. You have protections legally. The other thing is it allows you to kind of, as a business, carve out your own space within a very crowded market. I mean, a lot of times patents nowadays are really just improvements. There's very, very rarely do you find something that's,
completely novel, right? Brand new. Yeah.
Never seen it before, and they're all improvements, right? So if you're trying to compete with other companies in a crowded space, you've done the whole SWOT analysis. You've looked at all your different competitors. You say, okay, this is the area we need to get into. How do you actually carve that area? Because if you go create it, and your competitors realize, oh, this might be a competitor. I like what they're doing. And they're like, oh, the first step they're going to do is say, do they have any applications on file? I mean, I do that for a living. Hey, can we do an analysis to see what this competitor has out there? That's step number one. If you have nothing, they're going to go create something and they're going to go file themselves. And before you know it, it's a first to file system, not first to invent. Mm-hmm. You're already out.
Yeah.
Isn't
that a difference with trademarks? Because trademarks, it's first to use, not first to file. So is patents, is that completely different?
Completely different. First to file. You could have created it first unless you publicly disclosed it. Now that's when things get a little interesting. You have a year from the time that you publicly disclosed. Let's say you went to a trade show. Let's say you went and did a pitch to one of these companies. You've disclosed it, you have record of it, that's great. But if within a year, it becomes public knowledge. So typically one of the first things I'll tell people is, hey, file a provisional. You know, a provisional is a very useful tool if it's utilized wisely. You can file
a provisional. What is a provisional? What is a provisional application?
Absolutely. So provisional applications are essentially applications that you can file that are not examined by the USPTO. The way I like to explain it is we can file a provisional. Let's say someone wants to do a pitch to your company and they say, hey, you know, I really like to show you this product. Think you might be interested in it. And you go to them, they might say, okay, yeah, that's great. Looks good. We're not interested. And then go and recreate it. Happens all the time. Yeah. All right. But let's say before your disclosure, you call me, you say, listen, I'm going to go do this disclosure in a couple of weeks. The first thing I'm going to say to you is we need to get something on file. So we show that you were the first to file, meaning first to file means I was also first to create. If it's someone else, they're the first to create it. So we can file the provisional and it buys you a year. You get a whole year to do all your marketing. You can continue to make your designs. You can go back to your developer and keep making in your manufacturer and make changes and get it to the point where, all right, I think it's now commercially acceptable. I can now, you know, sell it to whoever, or I can now start creating this product and commercializing it. At that point, we file a non-provisional. So you're technically patent pending, but, you know, essentially just saves your place in line and it saves your date. So we file today.
Got it.
And you file a year from now, you still get the benefit of that priority date of the date that you filed a year later. So it's always important to make sure you get everything you need to get done, all your ducks in a row within that year. Now you can turn around, file the non-provisional, get it examined all the way through, and hopefully you get a registered patent at the end of it.
So what is the current timeline of getting a patent, a full patent?
So if you go through the standard process right now, it could easily take anywhere from 2 to 3 years. A lot of it has to do with the fact that the USPTO has a heavy backlog. They have examiners who are overloaded and they have all these different cases they have to examine. You know, they have a certain amount of time they have to get them done by. So if you go through the standard process, you can expect from the time that you file to the time, hopefully you receive a registered patent, it could take 3 years. But once you go through that process, you're patent pending. You can start advertising your product, your idea as a patent pending idea. And that is enough notice, essentially put people on notice, hey, no, they actually have something on file here. Or maybe there's a potential company interested in you. You know, that's where a lot of valuation comes in as well. So that's part one. Part two is they have the patent prosecution highway. So if you, for an additional nominal fee with the USPTO, they have all these different fees, but you know, for a nominal fee, you can have the whole process completed within a year. So
what is that nominal fee?
I think right now it's around $1,500 depending on the size. So they have like micro entities, small entities, and then obviously large companies. So depending on where you fit within that scale, the fee can change. So you can pay the additional fee on top of the fee you already had to pay for the non-provisional filing. And then as long as you do everything, or your attorney takes care of everything, you know, in a timely fashion, they promise that you will go from filing to registration within a year, assuming that it's a novel idea. And for a lot of companies, that's very enticing because they're like, hey, we're trying to carve this space. We want to carve it fast. And we know we have a great idea that we want to push to the public, and we want to get ahead of our competitors right now and be protected.
Okay. And so for trademarks, when I had my law firm, I was doing flat fees. Mm-hmm. I know for patents, it's harder to do a flat fee, but would you say like a small business comes to you and they have this product, this invention that they want to protect? What is the average cost that they're looking at paying, including filing fees, everything involved?
So going from just the preparation or going through
the entire start to finish?
Very easily, it could range, depending on the examination process and prosecution that's taking place. It easily can be anywhere from 8 to probably 15,000, very easily. Okay. It is an investment, you know, but it's also an investment in your protection. It's also an investment in your business. I try to say it's kind of like insurance. You know, you don't want to go to the doctor without health insurance. You don't want to drive your car. Some states won't even let you drive your car without car insurance.
Exactly.
You know, so it's insurance for your business, but also look at it like an investment. Once you're able to get your patent registered, you're able to find a certain valuation of how much it's actually worth. Banks actually look at that as an asset in your business.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that's the part that people miss. IP when it comes to trademarks, when it comes to patents, even trade secrets, you know, so there's various areas that when you're able to get it evaluated, they can say, oh, your company is worth oh, 10 million? You might not have 10 million in the bank, but you have an asset that's worth 10 million, yeah. You know, and then if for, you know, all of our business owners, entrepreneurs who understand what that means, yeah. I mean, think about all the funding ideas now, you know, that, that you're able to think about in order to really expand your business yeah. to a whole new level. So yes, it's a $10,000 to $15,000 investment for potentially, hopefully a $10 to $15 million valuation. So
yes.
it's important.
One thing that I want to touch on, because I love that yeah. you're talking about value, because I try to teach a lot of business owners who, a lot of our audience is very small business owners, a lot of side hustlers. And I try to teach them, look, it's not just about this cash flow. It's about creating value in your business, because at the end of the day, like that's going to be your ticket, not just this cash flow right now. And I even, so Legalpreneur, we've gone through, we did a small friends and family round, but we're about to start raising money again. And, but I also talked to a lot of startup founders going through, you know, debating like, hey, are we going to raise money? What are we going to do? Like, how are we going to fund our business? And I tell them all the time, like, don't be afraid of debt. Don't be afraid of debt and going to those banks to get that line of credit, to get this business loan. Showing these things in your business increases that value, increases your chances of getting funding just from a bank, debt from a bank. Like debt, sometimes, especially depending on where you are in business, a lot of times debt is way better than getting that VC funding. At the end of the day, it is going to be way cheaper than getting a VC that's going to take 20, 50% of your company when everything is said and done with. Because if you're a startup founder and you start funding from day one, you're going after VCs from day one. When you go to sell your company, most likely you're not going to own more than 20% of the company.
That's right.
It is in your best interest to bootstrap from the beginning. And bootstrap includes debt.
Yeah.
That just means you don't have outside investors. A bank is not investing when you have debt. It is just debt that you can pay off over time. And being able to show the value of your business is much higher than just this cash flow that you have. It is critical in being able to make that decision of, okay, we can just fund with debt versus VC money.
Absolutely. And even if you take it a step further, like going back to your point about, you know, you selling your business, I have several clients like, hey, I just want to build this business up. Like they're serial entrepreneurs. And then I want to yeah. sell it to someone. And then I'm yeah. going to move on and I'm going to flip it and move yep. to the next one. Completely okay. You know, I would love to be like them. That's why I like working with them.
Yeah.
You
know?
but typically that's what they do. I mean, they turn around, they get their portfolios evaluated and they're like, oh, okay. So it's worth this much. Because at the end of the day, when you think about these major mergers and acquisitions, people always wonder, mm-hmm. how did they value that company that much?
Right. Yeah.
They're looking at the IP. They're looking mm-hmm. at, you know, who their commercial base is. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, we know how much money we are investing and we know what our return is. So here's our offer, yep. you know, but mm-hmm. if you come in and you don't have anything protected, you know, you're a liability, your company's a liability. Why would you be attracted to a Google or an Apple or a Facebook? Yeah. You're not going to be attracted to them because they built massive IP portfolios. That's what exactly. they care about. Can we work in that space? And they enforce them and go after other people who are trying to do what we're doing. Can we do
yes.
it?
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh, Bennett, thank you so much. Oh my, I so glad that I had you on here. I know that we could talk so much longer about patents, but please tell the audience, where can they find you? How can they reach out to you if they might have an idea that can be protected? If they have an invention that can be protected, where can they find you?
Sure, absolutely. Bennett.David@davidiplaw.com is my email, or www.davidiplaw.com. You can find me there. Instagram, we're trying to build our social media presence at Patentlytical. You know, I try to be very analytical the development of my clients' patent portfolios and things like that. So that's where you can find me, and look forward to working with any and everyone of all sizes.
I love it. I was going to call you David. And I knew I was going to do that this whole time. Bennett, thank you so much. And don't worry, you all, everything will be in the show notes. You can just click there, find everything that you need. Bennett, thank you so much. This has been great.
Absolute pleasure. I look forward to it.
Here at Legalpreneur, we're committed to providing a supportive legal community for all business owners. I know how scary the legal stuff can be. If you found this information helpful, I would be so grateful if you could share it with a fellow business owner. And quite frankly, it doesn't cost anything to rate, review, or subscribe to the show. Your support helps me reach more listeners, which allows me to support more business owners in their entrepreneurial journey. Have any questions or comments about the show? feel free to drop me a line on Instagram. I promise I read all of the messages and comments. And if you want to be a guest on the show or know someone that would make a great guest, simply fill out our application form and a team member will reach out if we think it's a good fit. I'll see you in the next episode.